This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Justice League, Wonder, Lady Bird, The Star, and the highly controversial I Love You, Daddy. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the home cinema roundup featuring Atomic Blonde. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, or you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First, some cleanup. There's accusations being lofted back and forth, and then there's a lot of, I hate to use the term fake news because it's been so co-opted by a political contingency, but really there is a lot of fake news happening, and this is not an indictment of the free press at all. We need more of the free press. What this is an indictment of, this is an indictment of questionable news sources. Anybody can go online and post as anyone and tell the story, and people can comment on it. And some of this, especially when you see this showing up in film websites and these blogs, they don't have any sort of journalistic integrity. This is why you need a free press, because in a free press, you have entities that source their material, they do investigative reporting, they fact check, they do the journalistic work. Whereas in, say, like film journalism, a lot of these blogs just hear a story or repost a Twitter feed. This is not real journalism. And we saw this actually take place in the middle of last weekend. During all of this, the latest wave from last week with Louis C.K. and the sexual misconduct allegations, there was a report that, and it spread like wildfire, that Gal Gadot refuses to do Wonder Woman 2 unless Brett Ratner is removed completely from the franchise. And that goes to the whole, all the allegations against Brett Ratner, which are sleazy and gross and weirdly consistent with these other ones that we've seen from other entities like Harvey Weinstein and Louis C.K. He's been involved in the DC movies ever since he was brought in at one point to direct a Superman movie and ended up having to knock it off the ground before Superman Returns was directed by Bryan Singer. That is a total hogwash story. That is not true. Patty Jenkins has come out and said, no. The Brett Ratner company, Rat Pack Dune, which is been involved in all of these movies, has a production contract through 2018. So the Justice League is the last movie that he's involved in, contractually. Now, they may not re-up his company, but I think that has more to do with just the general allegations than Gal Gadot taking a stand. Nothing against Gal Gadot, but she didn't do that. This is not true, but it fit the narrative that people wanted to hear, and it spreads like wildfire on social media. This little story is a microcosm of what goes on in political advertising. This is why the government is investigating the use of news and opinion in social media, because it's very easy to get these stories out there to spread. But sometimes they need to have a certain degree of validity behind them, because it only took a couple days to debunk this story. Now, it's interesting. Another little piece of this, Gal Gadot, and again, I'm not picking on Gal Gadot. I don't know her. I think she seems very sweet in the stuff I've seen. And in fact, I'm a big fan of hers now, because I think she took getting the role of Wonder Woman, she took that to heart, and she says, I'm now an ambassador for women. I'm an ambassador for girls. I'm going to take this seriously. It's not just another role for her. And I think what she's doing, and the fact she's working, she takes it seriously. It's clear she's taken acting lessons so she can perform better in these movies. And I think she's probably the one who's the most committed of all of the actors playing the different superhero characters. I don't know when we're going to get a contract negotiation for her, but I don't think it's going to be like this Daniel Craig going, oh, what if I want to play Bond again? I think she's really into this, and I think it's great what she's doing with this, and she's spreading a lot of goodwill. So I'm not going after Gal Gadot, but I think this is an interesting story in this toxic climate we have. There was a story that broke at the end of the weekend that apparently some, and I'm not going to go into the details of it, But it's essentially an anonymous accuser claims to have been sexually assaulted by a friend of Godot's when she was like 19 and then was shamed by Godot. You can find it if you search Gal Gadot Medium, because that's the platform it was on. And the Medium, the platform, which is sort of this microblogging thing that anyone can feed and take stories out of, which takes, again, no journalistic integrity. There's no reliability or sourcing behind this. This is just anybody can pull a Medium story. Well, Medium ended up taking it down, ostensibly because it targeted Gal Gadot. And what I find interesting is the immediate reaction from this sort of film Twitter community was aggression to the person who does this accusation. But aren't we supposed to believe all accusers? And look, I don't know whether Gal Gadot did. I don't know if she shamed somebody who was sexually assaulted. I don't know if that happened. But she was 19. If she did, she was 19, just starting in a very cutthroat modeling world. Maybe she did. I'm not going to hold it against her for what she's like in her 30s now. That's ridiculous. And that's sort of this hysteria that is building up. And that's the problem with this Me Too campaign is, yes, if you get sourced material like the Harvey Weinstein scandal or the Louis C.K. or the Bill Cosby, these are things that are sourced and researched and done with journalistic integrity. As opposed to Me Too, which is just anybody can go out there and make an accusation. And we're seeing it happen with people like George Takei and Richard Dreyfuss. And I mean, just a whole bunch of these people that just got to be lofting these accusations. And there's just one, there's no like pattern of behavior, and they're not being reported and researched the way that journalism should be done. What I find interesting is these two stories about Gal Gadot, the false one fit the narrative and it got pushed. The second one didn't, and it got buried. And aren't both of them worth looking into to find out whether one's true or not? Part of the problem is we have to get past the fact in this country that people worship celebrities and people treat celebrities like they're your friends. They are not. We have to get past this idea that we have to like somebody to like their work. I mean, look at William Friedkin. He made one of the best movies of all time. Forget it as a horror movie, but one of the best movies of all time was The Exorcist. And that, he was toxic on that. I mean, he was abusive and he was mean and insulting and demeaning to his actor, but he ended up making a great movie. And I don't want to necessarily have beers with the guy, but it's a great film. So in the end, we have to get past this celebrity worship, because it's so easy to tear something down, especially if you're picking something up that's 13 years in their past. That's not even like a major problem. That is just a major problem because it fits the narrative right now and it's a trigger. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Rampage, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, opens on April 20th.
Last night, George was 7 feet and weighed 500 pounds. This morning, he's 9 feet, pushing 1,000.
Are you familiar with genetic editing? Changes will be incredibly unpredictable.
Is he the only one?
Oh, you didn't know about the 30-foot wolf?
Just thinking, the only thing that's missing right now is a giant crocodile.
I used to play this video game all the time, and I loved it. I had a blast with this video game. I've always been skeptical of video games turned into movies because there's no story. I mean, Rampage, there's no story to Rampage. It's just you got to kill these monsters. Looks like they're working to put a story, and they're getting essentially a King Kong kind of movie out of it. Is it going to be nearly as good as Kong Skull Island? Probably not, but it looks like it might be kind of fun. The next one I want to hit real quickly is Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation.
A cruise?
Ooh. Surprise!
Oh, no.
Dad!
Okay, smile.
Check it out, Dad. There's so much to do. Olympic-sized swimming pool.
I got this.
Oh, you can eat, buffet. Phone service, spa!
Yeah, so impressive. It's like a hotel on the water.
I love cruises, and I understand the idea that, oh, it's just a hotel on the water. But I go on cruises all the time. I have a blast on them. And this looks like it might be a lot of fun. It's odd that it's coming out in the summer, not like in September or October, which is when the other Transylvania movies came out. But I think they're going for the big summer blockbuster movie, and these movies don't make as much money in the fall. Still, it looks fun. So I'm looking forward to this one. And that is it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Wonder and Lady Bird.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam
Style. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the smaller movies that are out this week. Before we get into Justice League with Wonder Woman, let's just talk about Wonder. Which is kind of a Wonder year, because we had Wonderstruck last week, we have Wonder this weekend, Wonder Woman this summer. But this one's Wonder, it's not about superheroes, it's about a disfigured child that faces the challenges of making friends and endearing bullies when he goes to school for the first time in the fifth grade.
My name is Augie Pullman. Next week, I start fifth grade. And since I've never been to real school before, I'm pretty much totally petrified. I've had 27 surgeries. They've helped me to breathe, to see, to hear without a hearing aid, but none of them have made me look ordinary.
Look at his face. I've never seen anything that ugly in my life.
Why are you sitting here then?
Because I want some nice friends for a change. Me too.
I need to preface this by saying I am a cynical SOB. This movie is heartwarming and charming and sweet and lovable and inspiring, and I want nothing to do with that. It's not that I don't like a good cheesy movie now and then. This one just lays it on a little thick. It's based on a best-selling book, and what I've been told by some people is that there are like entire groups of schools that are going as a group because they've all read the book. And I've not read the book. I think I have a copy of it. I mean, movie companies send me books all the time that I don't read because I wait for the movie. It's not even like, you know, say, well, you're going to read Wonder? And you'll be like, I hear they're making a movie. It might come out in a year and a half. Maybe I'll read the book. They'll send me books like a week before the press screening. And I'm like, I'm not reading this book in a week. I got way too much other stuff to do. But anyways, Wonder, when it comes down to it being a bully movie, I mean, it's really hard to make a movie about a kid struggling in school with friends and bullies without kind of falling into cliche. And this one certainly does that at times. And the kid in it is fine. I mean, he does a good job. And I mean, the acting's good. I guess, I don't know. My biggest problem, I always come at this kind of from a parental perspective. Because I've got three kids. I've raised three kids. I help take care of my cousins. You probably, if you follow me on social media, you've seen posts about Cody the Destroyer and Mika the Merciless. They're my cousins. I take care of them. So I am all about kids. I've been taking care of kids literally for close to 20 years. And some things rub me the wrong way. The first thing that bothers me about this movie is the whole thing is they send this kid to school. They never say this directly, but like every line that Julia Roberts has in the first hour of this movie is like a platitude you'd find on some inspirational poster on the wall of Sue Heck in from the Middle. And she sends him to school with this attitude of, well, if they make fun of you, it's because they just don't quite understand. And I'm like, no. I mean, like when my kids went to school, I remember one of my sons had an issue with a kid in preschool. And the kid was being a jerk. The kid was like, I don't want to play with you because I want to play with this kid. I don't want to play with you at all. It was inappropriate. And I remember I said to my son at 4 years old, I said, that kid is an a-hole. And I didn't use that. I actually used the whole word. I said, and I don't care if you tell him that. Fully expecting the next day to get a call from the teacher and say, guess what your son said to another kid? But I told him, I said, no, look, sometimes kids and people are jerks. Sometimes kids and people are a-holes. And you just got to realize that that happens. And there are things that you can do to get around it, but you cannot let that define you and destroy you. And they never prepare the kid that way for this. So when he does deal with the a-holes and jerks and the people in schools, he's ill-equipped for that. It also tries to cram too many stories in there because apparently it's a book, you know, it's based on a book. So they have all the different perspectives of the kids and the family and the friends. But They try to cram too much in there. And I guess it services the fans, but it's too much. The other thing, and this is a little weird little thing. I see this in movies a lot. They'll over production design things. Like if it's a middle class family living paycheck to paycheck, their house is still gorgeous and huge. And you'd be like, where do they get the money to buy that house or rent that house? There's a disconnect between Hollywood and the average person. And like they're like at school and they're getting school lunches and kids are like fifth graders are getting full salads and a side of like zucchini. And I'm just like, I'm calling BS on that. I'm sorry. No way. Does any realistic fifth grader buy that kind of lunch? Do a drinking game. Watch this movie. Take drinks every time you see a piece of celery. You will be hammered by the first half hour. Celery gets more screen time in this movie than Julia Roberts does. Or Owen Wilson. Hey, wow, look at all the celery in this movie. Anyways, I like I said, I'm a cynical SOB. This didn't connect to me, so I'm going to have to say that Wonder kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Lady Bird. Greta Gerwig writes and directs this semi-autobiographical coming-of-age film about a girl from Sacramento who rejects her middle-class hometown life and yearns for a greater existence.
Lady Bird, is that your given name?
Yeah.
Why is it in quotes?
I gave it to myself. It's given to me by me.
Lady Bird always says that she lives on the wrong side of the tracks, but I always thought that that was like a metaphor. But there are actual train tracks.
What she did was very baller, very anarchist.
Put the magazine back!
She has a big heart, your mom.
She's warm, but she's also kind of scary.
You can't be scary and warm.
I think you can, your mom is.
Like most people in the film community, I think Greta Gerwig is charming as all get out. Part of it is she's got a lot of charisma on screen. She actually lights up the screen. I have not seen a movie that she's been in which I don't at least like her. I've seen her in movies I don't like. But whenever she's on screen, I really like her. She's a beautiful woman. She looks very approachable and she's sweet. She's affable. And she's also gotten into co-writing movies. She worked with Noah Baumbach for a while and now she's taking the directing on her own, which is great because I think she's a real talent. She is one of those people who can write and direct and act. And I think she should do more of that. And this one stars Saoirse Ronan as Lady Bird, which is essentially Greta Gerwig in the 90s. Going to this Catholic school and just hating the oppressed environment of it, but also being this free spirit and she has a lot of spunk and she's exciting and she does her own thing and she defines her own success. And that's very refreshing. And it's a wonderfully written piece, has some great humor to it. And it also captures the manic depressive angst of a teenage girl. I'm not a teenage girl, but I grew up with one. I have a sister who's 2 years older than me and I saw her and my mom fight like crazy sometimes. And so I saw that electric emotion that teenagers and particularly teenage girls can have as they're developing into a woman. And that is captured perfectly. And not just with the scenes and the dialogue and the action, but with the editing and the pacing and how the movie itself fits together. Now, it is a comedy and has some extremely funny moments, but it's not a comedy in the sense of something like The Hangover or Wedding Crashers or something like that. It's an independent comedy. This is for people who like independent movies, who, if you know who Greta Gerwig is, you're probably going to like this movie. If you don't know who she is, if you're like, I've never seen a movie she's been in before, you're probably not going to be a big fan of it because it definitely does have that independent feel. But it's a wonderful movie. It's a great film. It shows the struggles that teenagers have and the identity struggles and everybody yearning for something greater. You know, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and I saw so many people that I knew in high school. I just want to get out of Columbus. I want to go. And it's not even go to New York. It's just they wanted to get out of Columbus. So it's neat to see this plague on a kid who wants something bigger out of life. And the movie nails it. I think it's a great introduction to a greater career that I think Greta Gerwig can have as a director. And with that, I say that Lady Bird rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Justice League and the Star. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life.
Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Justice League. We've been waiting for this movie for years, actually. What's funny is, if you go back to how this developed, and I think a lot of people have forgotten how things worked out in all this chaos, people at DC were just like, oh, we're going to do our Batman movies. We're finishing up Christopher Nolan's movies. We're going to greenlight this new Superman movie that's going to be darker and grittier and more realistic like the Batman movies. And that was greenlit for release in 2013. Well, in 2012, leading up to the Avengers, those movies did okay. I mean, Iron Man, those two Iron Man movies did really well, but Incredible Hulk did okay. Captain America did okay. Thor did okay. They weren't like groundbreaking movies. Then they did the Avengers and everybody was caught off guard with this $200 million opening weekend, $600 million release, this $1 billion plus movie over the summer. And suddenly DC was like, we want an Avengers movie. Oh, we're just finishing up our Batman movie and we haven't even started on our Superman movies. And so instead of saying, okay, well, let's take a breather and do this slowly and rationally, they fast-tracked it. They said, we want to get a Justice League movie as quickly as possible. We'll get Man of Steel out there, and then the sequel to Man of Steel is going to be Batman versus Superman, and then we're going to, you know, and so they kind of put the cart before the horse. They also were trying to fit this all into the style of Man of Steel, which was a darker, muted, more gritty, realistic, quote-unquote realistic Superman movie. And so the last 4 years have kind of been untangling some of that, untangling the Christopher Nolan influence in Superman, that grittier Dark Knight version of Superman. Which Christopher Nolan, even though I've gotten in arguments with people over it, he totally helped spearhead that. The other problem that they had is they had Zack Snyder directing everything. One of the big things they did with Marvel that was smart is they had Jon Favreau start Iron Man, and they ended up having him do Iron Man 2, but they had other directors do these movies. And what that did is that allowed them to put a lot in the pipeline. They weren't relying on one person for everything. And ironically, the best received DC Universe movie was not directed by Zack Snyder, and it wasn't dark and gritty. It was Wonder Woman this summer. Huge hit. And I think Wonder Woman started a course correction. It corrected itself into Justice League as well, not just with the feel of the film in terms of making it a little more, you know, friendly and a little bit more lighthearted and have more humor, but of course when there was a personal tragedy that hit Zack Snyder, Joss Whedon came in and did a polish. So you really do, in this movie, you get kind of this amalgamation of two different directors who are actually have very different styles. And now here we are at Justice League, and now everyone's like, is it going to work? So in the film, Bruce Wayne builds a team of superheroes, including Wonder Woman, Aquaman, The Flash, and the Cyborg, to defend Earth against an ancient god who wants to destroy the planet.
The world remains in mourning after the death of Superman. Violence, acts of war, and terrorism are all on the rise.
I had a dream. It was the end of the world.
Invasion.
I think it's something more. Something darker.
Part of the problem with this movie is the trailers have really been terrible for this movie. They have not been appealing trailers. I think that has helped foster a lukewarm reception to this movie. Also, it does have certain elements to it that seem very Avengers-ish. I mean, you've got this giant god with horns on his head coming down and wanting to lay waste to the planet Earth. It seems a little bit like Loki. He's also looking for square artifacts that look a lot like the Tesseract from Marvel movies. So, and part of it's just because these are MacGuffins you got to throw into a movie to make it work. And so they have some certain connective material that you say that feels a little bit of a ripoff of Avengers. And they are trying to kind of make Aquaman into a bit of a Thor type character where he's kind of from a different world, but, you know, he doesn't really care about what's going on the surface. this movie works to get everybody together. And going forward, I think the DC movies are going to be better because I think they originally wanted to have them darker and more conflict. And that's not what you need. I remember reading the comics as a kid. I remember watching the Super Friends on television. I remember watching other cartoons for superhero movies. Part of the appeal is these are people that get along. You know how I said earlier in the show where I said we got to get past celebrities liking each other? This one, we got to go back to superheroes liking each other. They don't want to hate each other. They don't want to be at odds. They want them to be chums. You want them to use that kind of language. So when it comes to the Justice League, I think there's a lot of people out there, especially critics, who hate Zack Snyder for whatever reason. I don't know what he did to them to make them hate him so much, but there are people that just hate on Zack Snyder, and they were ready to hate this movie going into it, which is the wrong way to go to a movie. I went in with an open mind, and I gotta say, it's not perfect. It's not as a surprising revelation as the Avengers was like a near perfect movie. It was a lot of fun. And it went from beginning to end, and it worked. And there was a synergy to the Avengers. You don't necessarily get that with this movie, but boy, is it a fun movie. I mean, it's got action. It's got some humor. Ezra Miller's fantastic as the Flash. Gal Gadot gets a lot of spotlight for Wonder Woman because she's the most successful of the franchise right now. I still like Affleck as Batman. Yeah, Henry Cavill's molestache being digitally removed, I can get through that. But ultimately, it's a fun movie and it's exciting film and it works. It's a superhero movie. Like I said, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but if you go in there expecting to hate it, you probably will. But if you go in there with an open mind and you just want to see what we see in all these other superhero movies, it's fun. I enjoyed it. I had a blast watching it. I don't feel like I wasted my time. And if there was any real problem with it, I think it would have been better served to give like Cyborg his own movie ahead of it, but they were never going to do that because that would have been a one and done movie that nobody went to go see. And the reason they got Cyborg in there really is clear that they just wanted a black superhero. So they said, we got Black Lightning and we got Cyborg. Let's do Cyborg. And Cyborg works in this. I think it takes him a while to gel with the rest of the film. But when he finally does, it does work. So I'm looking forward to see what's coming next. I like this movie. I'm going to have to say that it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about The Star. This animated film tells the nativity story from the perspective of the animals traveling with Mary and Joseph.
This holiday season, witness the story of the first Christmas through a whole new set of eyes. Meet the unlikely heroes behind the greatest story ever told.
Herod is up to something.
Mary needs help. We need to save her. You're in danger. You need to listen to what I'm about to say extremely carefully.
Do you want a belly rub?
At this time of year, you expect at least a couple Christmas. I mean, when I say Christmas, like actual Christmas themed movies, either Santa Claus movies or Jesus movies. And it's done by Sony Animation. And Sony has actually had quite a bit of success releasing faith-based movies. They did the movies like Miracles from Heaven and War Room. And I remember talking a couple weeks ago about Sean Hannity's film and how that kind of flopped. And mainly because I don't think it was diluted the marketplace, but Sony, when you get Sony behind a movie, they target the market. And it's a Christmas story. I mean, that's essentially what it is. It's the nativity story. It's told from the animal's point of view. It's something that probably would have been direct to video 10, 20 years ago. It's a little bit odd of a release because they didn't screen it. So I've not seen it. I don't know if it's any good. The trailers look awful, but it's also odd that it's releasing like 5 days before Coco comes out. And you know Coco's going to be an animation juggernaut. That's a Pixar movie. It's got Disney. It's the only wide release next week. I really don't know how well The Star is going to hold up. So this might end up being another one of those faith-based movies that kind of crumbles, not necessarily for anything to do with it as a story, even though it kind of looks stupid. It just might be that it was poor release timing on this one. Ultimately, I think this is pretty clear what you're going to get. You're going to get some fart jokes. You're going to get some poop jokes. You're going to get some goofy characters. I think this would have been something I would have seen, on like, not Hallmark, but like, because they didn't have the Hallmark channel when I was a kid, but a Hallmark type special that they would have played like on a 7 o'clock on a Saturday, right before Christmas. But they didn't screen it, so this one gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about I Love You, Daddy, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Atomic Blonde. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with the highly controversial and now unreleased I Love You, Daddy. This, of course, if you don't remember the history of this because it was last week and everything that's happened in the last week, we're not in a 24-hour news cycle now. We're in like a three-hour news cycle. So much has happened since last week. Louis C.K. was going to be releasing I Love You, Daddy in theaters. It was ready to go like this week or next week. And these sexual misconduct allegations came out. He admitted to them. He apologized, but it still wiped him clean from Netflix and HBO. And now The Orchard has pulled this from release. Ironically, though, The Orchard had already sent out copies of this movie for award consideration. And that weekend, it was the most watched movie by critics because everyone put out reviews of this movie. And I thought it was worth talking about. Especially just in the context, it's weirdly relevant to the context of everything that's gone on with not just Hollywood in general, but Louis C.K. in a specific sense. So, and I Love You, Daddy. Louis C.K.'s now unreleased film features a comedy writer struggling to raise his 17-year-old daughter under the influence of New York City and the entertainment industry.
A girl that age is getting into trouble, and if she loves her daddy, that means you're doing nothing.
That's Leslie Goodwin. I've wanted to meet him my whole life.
Okay, well, he also dates really young women, and he's what, like 80 years old?
I am Leslie.
Hi.
I mean, everybody's a pervert. I'm a pervert, we're all perverts, who cares?
While this movie would have been relevant and interesting to talk about, regardless of what's been going on in the news, it is incredibly relevant to talk about now, because the essence of this movie is inappropriate sexual relationships among people in Hollywood or peripheral to Hollywood. That's not unheard of. I mean, Louis C.K.'s comedy has always been about awkward sexual situations. And when the accusations came out last week about him, I remember saying, well, it seems very much in line with his comedy shtick. So it wasn't like unexpected that this stuff happened. Now, in the movie itself, just take it at face value outside of the allegation, it has some funny parts to it. It also has some poignant stuff. It also addresses things that I think are getting lost in the hysteria of the Me Too explosion. One of the things that he does address in this is the attitude of people who have been on the receiving end of the inappropriate sexual age difference. Because one of the characters, Rose Byrne, plays a woman who, when she was a teenager, 16, 17, had a relationship with a much older man. And she defends that relationship. And he doesn't. He says, no, this was inappropriate. This constitutes statutory rape. You were not at a point where you make these decisions. And this is a real discussion I have heard. When people are like, oh, well, when I was 16, I had this relationship. And you're like, no, that was bad. You were not in a position to have a relationship with a person in their 30s when you were 14 or 15. And that was wrong then. You can't say that it was okay now. That is something that we do miss. The quote unquote victim in those situations, if they're not like accosted, they will defend those relationships, even if they're inappropriate. And I think that that's something nobody talks about. he's coming at this, as Louis C.K. was coming at this perspective of being a father. He is a father. He has daughters. So this is him struggling with his situation because he knows all too well that there's a predatory nature of Hollywood. It also shows the way Hollywood is, and not Hollywood because it takes place in New York, but it's that entertainment industry quagmire. But there are some other elements that they bring up in this film. Like, his character has a relationship with Rose Byrne's character, and you don't know whether he's enamored with her and wants to give her the role because he wants to get in her pants, or whether she's using her own sexuality to get a role, and that question does come up. I think it does bring up alternative perspectives of the inappropriate sex in Hollywood, and not just in the burn it down, all men are pigs, Me Too campaign situation. With that said, there are some creepy elements to this movie. The fact that he does kind of hypersexualize Chloe Moretz, she's 20, but she's playing a 17-year-old. It's not the first time this has happened. Heck, I mean, she was weirdly sexualized in the Kick-Ass movies, even when she was a little kid. The other thing is, what I find fascinating about this is that some of the other reviews of this film, people are making the very obvious connection to the film Manhattan, which was Woody Allen's film from, I think, the late 70s, like 1979 or something like that, which was in black and white as well and had this jazz soundtrack. And it's clear that Louis C.K., who has always listed Woody Allen as one of his influences in comedy, it's clearly influencing this movie. And there are people that are like, oh, Louis C.K. is a pig, he's a sleaze bag, but it's like Manhattan, which is a wonderful movie. And I'm like, whoa, you can't in the same breath condemn Louis C.K. and then praise Woody Allen for making a movie in which he has a weirdly age-inappropriate relationship with, at least in this one, the relationship that Louis C.K. is having is age-appropriate. It's just, and he's worried about his daughter having an inappropriate relationship with John Malkovich, or the character John Malkovich plays. Ultimately, this is an interesting movie. I hope it does get released, because it actually is even more interesting in the light of all these allegations. So I'm going to have to say that while not perfect, I Love You Daddy kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the box office. Last week, Thor Ragnarok came in first with $57 million, which is really good. I mean, it's going to fall to the Justice League, but it's, of course, its third week in theaters. And then Daddy's Home 2 and Murder on the Orient Express came in about $1 million away from each other, right around $29 million, $30 million. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is Atomic Blonde. Charlize Theron plays this Cold War action heroine on the search for a spy database in East Berlin.
Lorraine Broughton, expert in intelligence collection and hand-to-hand combat.
Agent Gascoigne was killed last night. He had an atomic bomb of information. Find out who's hunting our operatives. The clock is ticking, and everyone you get close to ends up dead.
Someone set me up. Someone from the inside. Now, this only ends one way. A bullet.
This movie is, unfortunately, I can't talk too much about this because I spent all my time talking about Louis C.K. and I Love You Daddy earlier in the segment. But to talk really quickly about Atomic Blonde, this was kind of one of those surprise hits this summer. It did really well. It was kind of that last gasp of summer, that last weekend in July. And it did quite well. And it was great to see Charlize Theron as a woman, actually of her age. She's in her 40s. She looks great in her 40s, by the way. And it's great to see her having a kick-ass action film. And she was fun in it. I think she was game. You see a lot of her. She is imposing. I've been compared to John Wick 2, and it certainly does work as an action movie. In terms of the Blu-ray, of course, the Blu-ray has, it's not nothing super great in terms of the features. There's a commentary with the director and editor. There's also a story commentary as well, which is kind of interesting. I always find those interesting in terms of how they, that it goes deeper into how they put this together, which is odd because it's kind of ultimately an action film, but it does deal with the story, which takes a little bit more work, in this film because it's all limited to sort of like this East Germany, backdrop, which tends to look like everything's the same place. It's sort of all gray and dingy. There's also some deleted scenes and sort of like just a couple featurettes on the location and the production. But that's about it. So the biggest bonus on this one are the commentary tracks. If you're into those, those are sort of like old hat now. I remember 15 years ago when those started showing up, they were fantastic. And now you expect them in there. So it's nice to have those still showing up on Blu-rays. There's actually a bunch of other stuff on Blu-ray. So I'm going to have to say the Blu-ray kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
The other movies that are out on Blu-ray and DVD this week include Wind River, which, of course, they're pushing for Oscars. They've tried to strip completely Harvey Weinstein's involvement in this, and Wind River's finally getting a push. I haven't yet gotten my four-year consideration disc, but I should be getting that soon. The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature. Amityville, The Awakening, which just didn't even, I don't even know if that opened in, I may have opened in a couple theaters, but it pretty much was a VOD demand. Brigsby Bear, which is an interesting alternative movie. And then Doctor Who season 10, the final season of Peter Capaldi, with his new companion post Jenna Coleman, is out on DVD and Blu-ray in time for the Christmas episode of Doctor Who, which should be happening at Christmas. That is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Coco from Pixar and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.